Hey, everybody. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
I'm Molly Wood. Welcome to Make Me Smart, the podcast where we are joined, as always, by you, because none of us is as smart as all of us.
We are talking this week about 100 days, but not the 100 days everybody's talking about, the president's first 100 days, which are going to be in the books really, really soon. We want to know what you want the government to work on in the next 100 days, and honestly, sort of a little bit of what we think is coming too.
Yeah, it's going to be like a little therapy session. We want to talk about you and what you want.
It is. Wait, did I sign up for therapy?
You did. You did. You didn't know, but you're in it now.
I don't want to do it.
We have an amazing answer to our Make Me Smart question coming from the former CEO of Paramount Pictures, Sherry Lansing.
Yep.
And we're going to answer your questions, because we have been getting this one a lot, about buying American or America or both.
There's a difference. There's a difference. First, though, as always, got to get our fix. So this is the part of the show where we talk about things that are happening in the news that matter to us and to you. I'll start. The government is not going to shut down. I'm going to put that right here and put a pin in it.
Really?
I'm just going to say that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You know why? Because it's stupid.
Yeah, but that has not stopped it from happening before.
No, but it was stupid then, too. And that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
And also really the proximate cause, which is to say, well, let me back up for a minute. Government funding expires on Friday, 3 days hence. If the government doesn't figure out a way to pay for more stuff, the government will shut down Friday night. I maintain that that's not going to happen because President Trump has pulled his demand from the funding package, which is funding for the border wall. And that's why I'm saying right here and now, shutdown's not going to happen. So proceed.
Hmm. Are there any other sticky wickets in that hole? I mean, don't get me wrong. I trust your impeccable judgment, but these are uncertain times.
These are very uncertain times. And maybe I shouldn't have gone there right away, but I just wanted to get that out just so we could be done with
this. No, I like it. I like, right. You know what I like? I like the optimism.
All right. Well, there we go.
I like the every little thing is going to be all right part of this. But don't you have a story that you want to tell us about what happened during the last shutdown? Don't you have a shutdown story?
She says, prompting him because he had forgotten what his story was about.
I would like to know the story.
In 1995, lo, these many years ago, I was a member of the United States Foreign Service. I was working at that point. I was in my training program to become a Foreign Service officer. And this was when the Republicans and President Clinton were at each other's throats over a whole bunch of stuff. And there was, late in 95, there were actually two government shutdowns. And each time we, all the Foreign Service officers and all government employees anywhere who were not vital people to the functioning of the government had to go in and sign a piece of paper that said, yes, we understand we're being furloughed and blah, 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 and yada, 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 and we're not going to get paid during this time and all that jazz. So 5-6 days of time off in Washington, killing time, living with my then fiance, or actually we weren't even engaged then, but my now wife, and we had a great time. And here's the moral of the story. We didn't get paid for those 5 days, but a month later, Congress says, oh, yeah, that whole shutdown thing that we did because we couldn't agree on government money, we're going to pay you anyway for those 6 days you took off. You multiply six days of full pay times a zillion government employees, and it went for naught. My point being, back where I started, it's stupid. That's my story. Maybe I hyped it too much. Did I hype it too much in our emails this morning?
That's a good story.
All right.
But how much of a mini bummer is it that that was 1995 and here we are in 2017 having the same conversation?
Well, it's more of the dysfunction of the American democratic process, right? I mean, you know, there's really no other way to say it than that.
Which actually leads us pretty darn well, come to think of it, into our mini therapy session. In my mind, I've come across a great phrase that I'm in love with, journalistically speaking, and I'm calling this beware of the nurtured narrative. The idea that we fall so in love with storylines that we repeat them, we the media, and the media in general, even the parts that are not we, repeat them incessantly and believe them to be true, and it causes us to be surprised sometimes when things happen. So we're trying to localize what's happening in the world now to you, the audience, and the only way we can do that in some instances is with polling.
Yeah. So we've got a thing we call the Marketplace Edison Research Poll. We partnered up with a polling organization about a year and a half ago. And in the lead up to the 2016 elections, and regular listeners to Marketplace will know this, we did four polls. And we asked about all kinds of stuff, how you're feeling about your job, how you're feeling about the government, all of this kind of stuff. The last one was right before Election Day. And then we just did another one. We were out in the field, I think, the beginning of April. And the results came in this week. and they're really interesting. I mean, generally speaking, we are less anxious about our personal economic situations. But this, and I think this is where you were going, 74% of Americans say they believe the government in Washington has forgotten about people like them. And that is simply stunning in a representative democracy. Mm-hmm. And it goes to that point I was making about the failure mm-hmm. of the democratic process over the past 25 or 30 years. It's insane. And that's across Democrats, Republicans.
No, I agree. And it gets exactly to your story about the shutdown, too, which is that at the end of the day, you did not matter to them.
Oh, no. They couldn't care less.
And then you got paid anyway. And so the shutdown didn't matter either.
Yep. Now, which goes back to from a couple of weeks ago, nothing matters.
Oh, man.
See that? See that? Did you see what I did there?
That was amazeballs.
But there's a bunch of stuff in this survey, and I would encourage you and beg you and plead with you to go on our website, marketplace.org, and we'll have a link at the Make Me Smart page as well, to dig into some of this stuff, because it's what you want out of the government and sort of what we were talking about up top about the next 100 days. You guys all want infrastructure spending. You want healthcare. Mm-hmm. Healthcare is the number one economic issue for people in this country, according to our survey.
Yep.
It's statistically valid, you know, all that good statistical stuff. But that's what you want. And here we have the government of the United States. I'm going to say it. Hold your kids' ears. In a pissing contest.
Yeah.
Over this thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
You know.
Because they have forgotten. I mean, it's fascinating, right? I read all of these, like, there are crazy long spreadsheets, by the way. And apparently we linked to one of those that I accidentally opened on my mobile phone, which is a terrible mistake. But there is so much data in here. And to me, it just all crystallized in this one, that one stat that 74% believe that the government in Washington has forgotten about people like them. Because if you look at, you know, never mind the polls about approval and disapproval and popularity. If you look at what people want day to day, regardless of who they voted for and how they feel about who they voted for, they ultimately want many of the same things. Reasonable immigration that helps the U.S. be successful. Mm-hmm. Trade for the same reason, because that helps the U.S. and then ultimately, you know, individual wage earners be successful. They want a strong national economy that includes taxes on companies who move jobs overseas, but also don't let the rich get away with not paying their fair share. Like, it's all basic stuff that at the end of the day, everybody can agree on. And then somehow it gets to Washington and it does not come out in the way that we envisioned.
Yep.
You know, or they argue about all the wrong things. And I will tell you, like, purely from a personal, like, I have just as a concrete example, every single day at the end of my little cul-de-sac that I live in, this big tree fell down.
Oh.
Huge tree. Because trees have been coming down left and right because it hadn't rained here in like 6 years. And it took a whole lot of pavement with it. I don't know, a quarter, maybe an eighth of the end of the street with it. And it's right where there's a public stairway that we all, the whole neighborhood uses to get down to school. There's an elementary school at the bottom of that stairway.
Yep.
And we all go that way. So part of the fence is collapsing over the stairs and there's detritus from the tree. And it's been like this for weeks. For weeks. And to me, it is an object lesson every single day in how we are just on our own.
Right.
Because I don't know when our government's going to get around to fixing that. You know, I mean, it extends. I think that feeling for people extends all the way to the city level.
Yeah.
And it's tired. And you just feel tired. And then you think, okay, well, what are our politicians talking about? Oh, taking away healthcare. Wait, what? Like, it just is a massive disconnect.
Or this week, funding, whether the government's going to stay open and all the tourists and all the high schools and all the everybody's who's going to go to D.C. and potentially show up on Saturday morning and have the Lincoln Memorial be closed.
Right.
And you're like, come on, man.
Like, really?
Yeah. So there's all kinds. I mean, we could go on like this forever, but there's all kinds of other stuff in this poll, including something that we've talked about. Should the government be run like a business? Because here we have a president who is a CEO. Interestingly enough, and I did not actually expect that this would come out this way, we are evenly divided as to whether the government should be run more like a business. 50% say yes, 49% say no. That does break down along party lines, right? Republicans far more likely than Democrats to think that. 78 Republican, 32 Democrats.
Yeah.
So we asked people all over this great land of ours, should the American government be run like a business? Here you go.
Yes, it should. I think there's a lot of wasteful spending that could be cut, and running it as it is not really cutting it.
When you have a business, you're looking for profit. You know, you look to make more money. Like, we got to get this production out and we got to make this money. But running the world, you have to consider people's feelings, what kind of finance problems they may have, what is their medical. There's a lot of things you have to consider. A business, straight up, is made to make money.
It should be run like a small business. Not a big business. A small business, because a small business connects you to the neighborhoods. You'd be so connected and in tune to your surroundings and the people who make this country great.
That's so funny, because that's exactly what you were just talking about, having to be connected to the neighborhoods, right?
I love that.
And that's not what's happening.
Yeah.
So it was, by the way, Robin Kublik of Louisville, Kentucky, Denise Patterson of Detroit, Michigan, Jennifer Colombo, she's out of Roseville, Michigan. Giving us answers to those, to that question. And it's really interesting because, and here's just a real life example, right? And let me just go off on a toot here for, I'm going to time myself 30 seconds. The president's talking about an infrastructure program. And the commonly batted around phrase is $1 trillion, but it's really not that. It's $150 billion worth of tax incentives that he hopes is going to get $1 trillion worth of private investment. What happens, though, when you have that slice of government being run like a business, right? When you have private investment in a public project, is you get different kinds of projects. Instead of just a highway, you get, for example, a toll road, because those investors have to recoup their money. So that's my one toot. It was 33 seconds.
I feel like I would have taken 2 to 3 minutes on that, though, because that's a really, that is a very interesting, relevant, and incisive toot.
See,
if you will.
but not that kind of toot. I can do that with infrastructure policy. You can do it with net neutrality, right? So, you know, it's a different deal.
But I will say, on that idea of running government like a business, one really interesting note that came out of, you know, there was a transcript circulating of an interview this week with between President Trump and an AP reporter.
Oh, my goodness.
And
yes.
One of the things that I found most notable about the transcript, and yes, there was a lot of nurtured narrative moments happening, right? Everybody was like, this is that. I will tell you that my actual personal favorite moment is when he pauses in the middle of the conversation about North Korea and asks the reporter if she would like a Coke or anything.
You want a Diet Coke?
Which was delightful, like, as dodges go. Whether it was stalling or just pure concern, I don't know. It was weirdly.
So if I ever get an interview with Trump, I'm going to say, hey, sir, do you want to cook or something?
One very notable thing, though, was that he specifically, when asked about what he had discovered approaching the first 100 days, was that government involves a lot of heart.
Oh, I missed that.
And that had surprised him. That it was about that there were a lot of feelings involved, that there were lives at stake, and that unlike business, where it is better not to have heart, the business of government involved a lot of heart. And I thought that that was really, really notable and worth calling out, because we talk all the time about the office changing people. And to me, that felt like a moment where you can see it happening and an important realization.
That is fascinating. I totally missed that. Talk to us about what you want out of the next 100 days of the life of the federal government of the United States. It's makemesmart@marketplace.org or marketplace.org/makemesmart. You can get us on Twitter. I'm at Kaya Rizdahl. She's at Molly Wood. Hit us up. Let us know what you think, because there's lots of fodder in this one, and especially that last little heart thing. I think that was fascinating.
And of course, if you want to be part of our editorial meetings, now we did not have one
because I had
to fly somewhere for a super secret interview, which will be appearing on our show soon.
It's a secret? Is it a secret?
I mean, I think it's like a secret. It won't be a secret by tomorrow, and
okay,
then we'll tweet
fine.
It.
All right.
But if you want to be part of our editorial meetings, check us out most Mondays on Facebook at 12 o'clock Pacific. It's on our Facebook pages now. And if you follow those pages, Facebook will tell you when we are going live. So Facebook.com/Kai Rizdahl, Facebook.com/Molly Wood for a fun little weekly video. Just like do it during your lunch hour.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, Sherry Lansing answers our Make Me Smart question. All right, if that music is making you feel like you want a box of chocolates, it's because...
Oh, good for you.
Because it was composed by Alan Silvestri for the 1994 hit film Forrest Gump. That movie would not have existed without the green light from Sherry Lansing, who at that time was head of Paramount Pictures.
I went out to her foundation offices in Century City the other day, a couple of weeks ago, interviewed her for Marketplace. She was, in case you don't know who she was, she ran 20th Century Fox, first woman to run a movie studio. She produced Fatal Attraction and The Accused. She retired about 11 or 12 years ago as the CEO of Paramount Pictures after just a whole slew of amazing movies. There's a new biography about her. It's called Leading Lady, Sherry Lansing and the Making of a Hollywood Groundbreaker. It's actually a pretty good read, truth be told.
Yeah, and it's full of stories about making big bets on creative projects. And we thought, well, Kai thought, let's be honest, he's the one to talk
about. Well, because the producer.
This is a lady who can answer the make me smart question. And if you ask some of the people we have talked to, that question can be a little bit of a stumper.
Totally true.
Something I thought I knew.
That's a really tough question.
That's a big old hunker of a question.
Gosh, that is good.
I love that new sting. That. Oh, my goodness gracious. I love that.
That is brand new, you guys.
That's a little Jenny Josephson producer magic right there. Anyway, Sherry Lansing with something she thought she knew, but later found out that she was wrong about.
The first thing that comes to my mind is that the world was fair. There has been so much injustice in the world, and I've watched so many good people suffer. All you have to do is pick up the paper and see innocent people who are collateral damages in revolutions and war. And on a more personal level, I have wonderful friends or family members who have been struck by disease for no reason. They did everything right. They were healthy. They ate a good diet. They're kind. They're decent. And they're struck by horrible diseases. And so I guess I'd have to say that the world isn't fair. And that's the hardest thing to accept, because I really was brought up to believe that there was only justice in the world. But I see the randomness of fate all the time.
Wow. Yeah, that made me tear up a little bit.
Yeah, right? I mean, and it's kind of a bummer, but you're like, well, yeah, I guess that's kind of true. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah. It's amazing how these questions end up being essentially on the same tip, right? I mean, I feel like that just gets back to everything that we were talking about at the top of the show. Good job, Sherry Lansing. Man. All right, we're going to take a quick break and pay the bills like any good studio head. And then when we come back, we will be kicking off, and I'm really excited about this, we're kicking off the Make Me Smart book group. And we're back, and we have a brand new segment based on all your good ideas, which is really where all the best segments come from. And we even made... here comes some new sound effects for it.
How to start a book club.
Books are fun.
I have my own book club.
Oh, I just can't wait to read a book.
Oh, my God. Look out, Oprah. Books are fun. That's true. They are.
Oh, my goodness. Ermagerd. What is it? Goosebumps. Ermagerd, goosebumps. Did you never saw that meme, did you, at all? Because you don't live on the internet. Somebody's going to get really excited about goosebumps. Clearly, though, book clubs, obviously a thing, so we're doing one too. We've been talking on previous shows about books that we are reading. You sent us a million great book recommendations, and so we thought we'd run with it.
So we're gonna do a thing. We made a quick poll. 5 books suggested by you. Some are wonky that continue the kind of things that we were talking about with George Lakoff, if you remember him. One is about space. One's about the rise of unmarried women as a political force. And there is even a science fiction thing for Ms. Wood, you know. So here's what you do. You vote for your choice. Vote once only, please. Vote once only. bit.ly/MMSbooks. I'm going to do it again. bit.ly/MMSbooks.
Dude, I want to read all of these. I peeked ahead. The books are... actually, it's so funny because a friend of mine just recommended this to me, The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion by Jonathan Haidt. And this is the one that's really on the George Lakoff line of thinking. Yeah. The other one is called... There's The Other Wes Moore, One Name, Two Fates by Wes Moore. This New Ocean by William Burroughs. Hmm. All the Single Ladies, Unmarried Women and the Rise of an Independent Nation by Rebecca Traister. Full disclosure, though, this was a staff pick. Because there weren't a lot of women authors suggested. And The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick. Thank you to Peter Harkins, Amy Sloan, Dick, who didn't give his last name, and C. Jenkins for all your suggestions. We're going to reveal the choice on a future show, and then we're going to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll give ourselves a couple weeks to read it and discuss. And if we choose your book suggestion, of course, we will send you a Make Me Smart Pop Sockets.
And if you have to ask what those are, well, you clearly haven't been listening. Ooh, there's the dog. I love the dog.
There he is.
Two things about the list. One, Rebecca Traister and all the single ladies. Man, she is smart, and she is spot on about so many things. Also, Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick. Haven't read it, but boy, that show is good. Holy cow, am I dying for season three. But anyway.
I know. See, Kai kind of cheated because he already,
Well, okay, fine.
I have to say, just as an aside, what? I'm just going to throw out a book recommendation.
What?
Because my son, for his birthday, got, you know, there's this YouTuber, Lily Singh.
Okay.
Who's just like crossed over into the mainstream world. And she wrote this book called How to Be a Boss, B-A-W-S-E, that we are reading at night. And it's a total, you know, self-help book, like how to be awesome in life.
Yeah.
And there are times when I'm like, oh God, this is ridiculous. Especially because so many of her travails involve like when I was making my YouTube show. But then the more I read it, the more I'm like, yeah, this woman is on to something.
Wow. Wow,
and I'm delighted that my son is getting such good life lessons from Lily Singh and learning how to be a boss.
Totally cool. Email us at makemesmart@marketplace.org with more of your book ideas. I will confess here, by the way, I gave up on the Robert Lowell psychograph. I couldn't do it. But you guys already knew that.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, I think nobody's judging you on that one. Good try.
Next up, your questions and your comments.
We are back, and you, as you always do, have so many good questions.
Make me smart.
Make me smart.
Hey, make me smart.
Make me smart. Last week, President Trump was in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He went to the Snap-on tool factory. You might have seen the pictures with the Snap-on American flag behind him, which I thought was actually kind of a great, genius branding idea. Anyway, here he is.
In just a few moments, I will be signing a Buy American and Hire American executive order. You haven't heard about that in a long time in this country.
So there was a lot that was in those executive orders. He talked about the H-1B visa program, bringing high-skilled workers in usually technology and science and medicine into this country, which got Erica Sealing curious about the president's comments. Here's Erica.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Erica from Queenstown, Maryland. What's the difference between Buy America and Buy American anyway? Love the show, and thanks for making us all smarter.
So to that first part, and then I want to know more about all the differences, but, mm-hmm. but to the first part, Buy America is actually a bill sponsored by Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, a Democratic senator of Wisconsin, by the way, which would require the use of U.S. steel and iron on some government water projects. The president told a local news station in Wisconsin that he was very much into that, and would support Duckworth 100%.
The bigger picture, though, the bigger Buy American thing, it's been around a while. Herbert Hoover, back on his last day in office in March of 1933, signed the Buy American Act, which required the American government to favor, quote, U.S.-made products for purchases. Suffice it to say, it's been a long and tortured path from there to here, because what happens when you do that is the American government winds up going through all kinds of gyrations and perambulations and all kinds of things to make sure that they are buying American. And it's really, really, really hard to find something that is made entirely in this country. And if you think it was tough in 1933, hoo boy, check out 2017.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's also interesting is like the National Review, a conservative publication, calls Trump's Buy American, Hire American policy dangerous nonsense. There is a whole sort of part of the conservative wing in this country who believes that it's damaging protectionism, and that it will, much like people who argue that an increased minimum wage will lead to businesses closing, that the idea that you would have to pay more in order to buy American so that you can protect this economy would lead to downstream economic consequences.
So, what economists like to call unintended consequences. They're just, you know, government policy is fraught and no more so than when they make unilateral declarations. So that's that. More now of your mail.
Where do we mail a letter?
So we got a whole lot of email and tweets reacting to a clip that we played on the show last week. It was Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner during a town hall. Maybe you forgot it because we only played it three times, so we should probably play it just one more time.
Well, you know, again, you know, nobody's got to use the internet.
Nobody's got to use the internet. David Abrams of Windsor Lock, Connecticut, called us with his answer to that one.
Hello, Molly and Kai. This is David Abrams from Windsor Locks, Connecticut. It's too bad I wasn't there at his town hall meeting. I would have liked to have asked him some questions. Do you use an ATM or do any electronic billing? Do you have a driver's license? Do you own a car? Do you pay any bills, even with a check? Do you have a website? Do you use email? Is your congressional pay direct deposited? I can go on, but the point, like you guys said, you cannot do without the internet. Keep up the excellent work. I wish you could post a video when Kai goes all bananas. It has to be really cute.
Cute. I don't know if I would be cute, but whatever. We'll get a video camera.
When Kai goes all bananas.
I don't even know what that means. George Hugh also wrote us to say that Sensenbrenner is actually saying nobody has got to use the internet. He said, and this is in response to something I think I said and that you agreed with, or maybe you said and I agreed with. He says, the idea that corporations having your data is less dangerous than the government having your data is, quote, quaint.
He went on to say, private companies have no morals and thus no backstop to doing whatever they want with your data. Some will have no accountability to you, and thus selling your private data and everything they can glean from that will go to the highest bidder. Think divorcing wife, political oppo, research paparazzi, anybody who doesn't live like you. And he said that by contrast, government will be regulated and limited to some degree, accountable to its constituents to some degree, and inept to a large degree. They're unlikely to be on the cutting edge unless it's some elite intelligence service who is already listening on all our cell phone conversations,
right,
and capable of activating your phone, computer, TV cameras, and microphones at any time. I would step away from that email for 1 second now and say that's a pretty big unless.
Yeah.
Because that's happening.
Right. Right.
I want the next version of our Edison poll to include a question about whether they think companies have forgotten about us.
That's actually a really good idea.
It's sort of like who's left us behind harder here?
Yeah, no, that's true. That's a really good point. Sorry, I'm literally making a note about that.
Maybe we can just, I love it because Kai's in charge of the whole poll. Kai's in charge of everything.
Okay, first of all, no.
Hey, Kai, can you,
can
you get that in the poll?
It would be different around here, let me just say that. But anyway, we also have to mention Fred Hurley. He's a longtime Buzz Out Loud listener, he tells us. Quote, after Molly's segment featuring avocado toast, I tried it for dinner the other night when I found myself in need of something quick and easy. Turns out I am now allergic to avocado, he says.
Oh.
Didn't used to be allergic to them, but I seem to have developed it and ended up, wait for this, in the ER. Some Epi and Benadryl later, I was fine. Useful lesson learned. So you can add allergy detection to the benefits of Make Me Smart. There's a little smiley face right there. Sorry. Right? I mean, ow.
That's not a benefit. And wow, yes. Please be careful when you don't. Okay. We're glad you're okay, Fred.
Yes.
And thank you for listening. And finally, Tony Wagner on our digital team, who has basically become the official blogger of Make Me Smart and is crushing it.
That's true.
Has a great write-up on our site about the differences between privacy law in the United States and the European Union. Check that out at marketplace.org/makemesmart. And if you didn't hear last week's episode, by the way, it turned out to be, it's not like this privacy conversation has not been happening all around us, but then obviously, with the revelations in that New York Times story about Uber, that there exists a company called Unroll.me that was supposedly unenrolling you from programs and emails you didn't want to be part of, but was at the same time using the access to your email to gather and sell data to companies, including Uber. It turned out to be remarkably useful timing because the Unroll.me CEO essentially apologized for the fact that nobody read the terms of service. Which is all that we talked about in our show last week.
Yeah. Oh, man. Fine print. All right. That's it for us. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to review us on iTunes. Subscribe. Tell a friend. Tell your mom. Tell your parents. Tell everybody. Spread the word because, you know, we're doing this for you. Well, and us too because we like it, but that's a whole different thing.
Yeah. Also, because we want to keep doing it.
Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson, Bridget Bonner, Cerise Castle, and senior producer Nancy Fargali. This week's program was engineered by Bill Lance, he says, as he looks up through the glass to make sure that's actually who's sitting there. Our theme music is composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive producer is Marketplace is Sitara Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is, I'm looking through the glass, yep, still Deborah Clark.
She doesn't have glass, just a hint. She doesn't actually have glass.
See, I don't. I'm in the blanket fort. See you next week. And we are out.
Boom.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.